Welcome to the New Zealand Foreign Trust Podcast with Kate Weiss, brought to you by Asia City Trust New Zealand Limited.
Hi, my name is Kate Weiss. I am the Managing Director of Asia City Trust New Zealand Limited. Thank you very much for joining us today for the third episode of the New Zealand Foreign Trust Podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing the regulatory environment and how this is a really important factor when considering the correct jurisdiction for trust for your clients. My guest today is Henry Brandt-Giessen from Dentons Kensington Swan. Welcome, Henry. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Henry and I are both contactable on LinkedIn and through our company's websites. Asia City Trust's website is Asia City Trust, and that's City, C-I-T-I. And Henry, your website?
Our website is dentons.com, D-E-N-T-O-N-S.com.
Perfect. So, Henry, let's get into it. So, regulatory environment. Why is regulatory environment so such an important consideration when choosing a jurisdiction for a foreign trust?
Well, I think there's two aspects to that, Kate. There's one in terms of the protection of the consumer. So the person or the organization that's procuring the fiduciary services, to make sure that they are dealing with a counterparty that's legitimate, that's solvent, that's controlled and owned by people of good character and is capable. And then I think there's also the perspective of any third parties who are dealing with the entity or the trust or the company, whatever it is that's being set up, that those people or organisations or such as revenue authorities or counterparties in transactions, regulators in other jurisdictions, that they perceive that entity which is set up in that particular jurisdiction to be legitimate, to be properly regulated or governed by people who are properly regulated. And so there's two aspects, I think, protecting the consumer and also making sure that the entity is able to do what it is intended to do in the world at large.
Okay, so if we put this in context, if I think about how it could protect the consumer, so if I think back in Switzerland, it was really important that we had good anti-fraud measures. Mm. And I remember the last transaction back in my days working for a bank, we actually had a situation where we'd been emailed a distribution request for $80,000 and it was fraudulent. So somehow the client's email had been hacked. They asked for 80,000. We went through our regular anti-fraud checks and it was to a bank account number that was different than we usually sent the money to. We did our callback, which was part of our anti-fraud measure. It was not the right person. We were able to detect that fraud. And that comes from having a strong regulatory framework, because that's dictated by your regulator that you need to have those callback provisions in place. So that's how it can protect the consumer, because you can stop that from happening. But how does having, and that's an obvious benefit to a client, but how does having a trust in a jurisdiction that doesn't have a reputation for permitting money launderers to use that jurisdiction really benefit a client?
Well, I think it just gives the structure some legitimacy.
I think that's key, that term legitimacy.
Yeah, because I think if it's set up in a jurisdiction which is less reputable because of issues that have arisen through a lack of regulation, then that structure is likely to be viewed with prejudice by third parties.
And I think that's key. It's banking. For example, setting up a bank account for a New Zealand trust is a relatively easy endeavor. You know, you say you were a New Zealand trust where banks are not scared, but some Caribbean nations try and set up a bank account with a third country. It's quite a difficult thing to do because of the reputation of some of the Caribbean nations. Setting up a bank for some of the African islands, for example, can be a really difficult thing to achieve. And I think it goes beyond banking even, you know, setting up even with alternative assets have derived or had their, you know, the source of wealth from some of those more notorious jurisdictions can be difficult.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, in some ways, the the processes that third parties like banks go through to determine whether a client is appropriate for their platform or their services can be somewhat arbitrary at times, I think, and unfair, but those processes are usually determined by laws in the relevant jurisdiction, and those laws are often influenced by blacklists and dictates from organisations like the UN and Financial Action Task Force. Now, we could go on for a long time about whether those lists are appropriate or properly constructed, but the reality is they have an effect and they can cause banks to de-risk. And so having a structure set up in a high-risk jurisdiction, one that's noted on those lists, is often going to cause difficulties, I think, with dealing with third parties.
And that's definitely an advantage New Zealand has. For example, we do a lot of trusts for Portuguese residents, and we're one of the few countries which is not on the Portuguese blacklist. And it really does help us to do business in that country. But we've had that situation before with some LATAM countries where we as the trustee, again, not on the blacklist, but the underlying company has been on the blacklist. And then the client has faced punitive taxes in those countries, not because the trust is in the wrong jurisdiction, but because the underlying company has been in the wrong jurisdiction.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the structures now often and quite appropriately should be viewed in whole rather than just in their various segments. And so counterparties will look at not just the trusts, but any underlying entities as well.
So that brings us on to the framework in New Zealand. And I think the first point to make out is exactly what you said earlier. We're not actually licensed as trust and corporate service providers in New Zealand. We are supervised. So we have the Department of Internal Affairs, which supervises both the trust and corporate service providers and the law firms for AML. We have the we are a regulated financial service provider. We have the Inland Revenue Department, who looks after the registration of trusts. And then we also have the Information Commissioner, who has the supervisory position for personal data oversight, which is pretty robust.
Well, it's certainly a lot more robust than it was. It's not when I started my career, there was no regulation, no supervision, and New Zealand was quite slow to start to regulate. But certainly that has changed in the last 10 years or so, to the point where we do have the DIA, as you say, exercising its powers to supervise in relation to anti-money laundering. And then the IRD is covering tax, and then the FSP or the register in terms of the provision of financial services. So it is a robust system now.
Yeah. And I think if you contrast with Switzerland, who have recently licensed trust and corporate service providers, so now you actually have to have a license and you have to prove that the directors of the trust company are suitably qualified and that they have sufficient funds to have a trust company. And you don't have to do that in New Zealand. And you contrast that again with a country like the British Virgin Islands, where you have to have authority from a supervisor there to actually become a director of a trust company. And you have to prove that you're not a criminal anywhere. And you have to prove not that you are sufficiently qualified to become a director out there. So when we're talking about a level playing field in New Zealand, the requirements to be licensed in all these other countries is far higher than it is in New Zealand. The AML requirements in New Zealand are the same as in all these other countries now. It is a level playing field. If not, the other countries have far higher requirements to have a trust and corporate service provider than in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think it's actually a weakness that that trustees in New Zealand aren't regulated. I think you've got to be careful, you know, in a holistic sense, like by an FSC, as you'd get in most of the more mature finance centres. I know that that's something that the legitimate players in the industry have wanted for many years, to be licensed, because there are some very, very good trustees in New Zealand, but of course because there's no licensing requirement, the barriers to entry are very low. So it's a very fragmented industry to the point where some people like us should really know everybody in the industry, but we probably don't. There'll be people doing this sort of work that we don't know. Whereas in a more sophisticated financial centre, you would know everybody. They'd be on a list, and that, as you say, they'd be subject to a lot more due diligence requirements before they could offer their services by a sort of a super regulator like an FSC.
Yeah. Okay, so I think what was really interesting as well, if we look at the Inland Revenue Department, who look after our CRS and our FATCA returns, and who also look after our trust registration. So they look at the annual returns we do for trust registration and the information that we have to return about settlers, trustees and protectors in New Zealand. And what's really interesting is there was a review within New Zealand about how the regulators perform. And those who reviewed the regulators said 80% of them strongly agreed that the Inland Revenue Department and the Information Commissioner were performing well. And I think that's a really strong testament to how they're doing, because most people don't think the regulators are doing well. But with 80% of those interviewed saying that they're doing well, I think that's a really strong pat on the back for those regulators. I won't say how the DIA performed, but the Inland Revenue Department and the Information Commissioner are doing well. You know, that's what their peers are saying. If we go on to how is New Zealand performing with regards to the regulatory environment on a world stage, we'll look at some statistics provided by the World Justice Project, and they have a rule of law index. And on the 23rd of October 2024, they issued its latest index. So they look at constraint on government's powers, absence of corruption, open government, fundamental rights, order and security, regulatory enforcement, civil and criminal justice. And New Zealand is sixth in the world out of 142 countries. That is amazing. What's really important is no other offshore or midshore centre is above New Zealand. So above New Zealand is Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden and Germany. So if you're looking for a jurisdiction which has a strong rule of law and a strong regulatory enforcement and strong civil justice, which I would imagine would be pretty important for looking at a jurisdiction, New Zealand would be best. It also looks at all of those things I listed. So for example, constraint on government powers and regulatory enforcement. And New Zealand again came sixth for the regulatory enforcement. So if we look at some of the other offshore jurisdictions, so the USA, so we're looking at Wyoming, Dakota, all of those jurisdictions, it came 26th on that index. That's the next closest offshore jurisdiction. And for regulatory enforcement, it came 22nd. Barbados came 35th and 34th for regulatory. The Bahamas came 50th and 65th for regulatory enforcement. And Malta came 30th and 43rd for regulatory enforcement. So New Zealand, I think, does stand out if regulatory environment is important when it comes to choosing a offshore jurisdiction. In my opinion, and obviously the World Justice Project, New Zealand is a strong contender.
Yeah, that's right. I think that I haven't interrogated any of that data myself, but that stands to reason. I think that in a country where the rule of law is so well entrenched and enforced, that New Zealand would rank high in terms of regulatory enforcement. We have a reputation for adhering to the rule of law, and regulations are made pursuant to laws. So that's encouraging, and I think a relevant consideration to people who are using the jurisdiction for structuring or for business or even for alternate residency.
Yeah. And so back in the beginning of podcast one, I actually said, when people ask me for how should they choose a jurisdiction, mine was, what we're looking for is We're looking for the least regulatory and legal intervention. We're looking for that continuity throughout the generations. So when we're looking for, if you have your trust in a jurisdiction which has a good reputation, your home jurisdiction is less likely to open up a review of your affairs. So if you've got New Zealand, which has a strong reputation for regulatory enforcement, in your home jurisdiction, it is hoped that your local authority is less likely to open up a tax investigation into you, or less likely to be sceptical of the robustness of the structure that you have in place. And that's why I think those sort of stats are important, because I'm sure that the more sophisticated home jurisdictions would be looking at something like the World Justice Project Rule of Law Index to sort of say, well, New Zealand is pretty good on its rule of law. That must be quite a robust jurisdiction.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it entirely depends on the circumstances as to whether and why and how a structure might be investigated. But there is a perception, I suppose, associated with some offshore jurisdictions which may encourage those investigations more than a structure set up in a jurisdiction which is perceived to be more respectable.
Yeah. So thank you very much for listening. I hope we have enthralled you in our discussion on regulatory environment. Henry, thank you very much for your time today. I hope you will come back and join us to discuss about the lack of political corruption in the public sector in New Zealand and to talk about economic and political stability. Henry, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Kate.
And listeners, thank you for joining us today. We'll be back with episode 4.